Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Barely Backcountry Podcast. Today's guest is Hunter McWaters, who is a hunter, he's a filmmaker, he's also the host of the Hunter's Quest Podcast. So we had a really good conversation about all things hunting, talked about what goes into filming and filming hunts, talked about his podcast and how he's been creating that and growing that over the last few years. So a really good conversation with Hunter. But before I get you guys into that, again, check out the podcast on social media. It's barely_backcountry_podcast on Instagram. And then my personal is c.dillashaw. Make sure you guys give the podcast a like, a follow, a share. All those things help out a ton. But I will get you guys into this podcast with Hunter McWaters. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Barely Backcountry Podcast. Today's guest is Hunter McWaters, who is the guest of the Hunter's Quest Podcast. He's a hunter. He's done some cool filmmaking stuff. So, Hunter, how's it going, man?
Good, man. Thanks for having me on.
No problem at all. So, real quick, before we get started, just kind of tell people about yourself, what you do, and then we can get into it.
So, my name's Hunter McWaters. Like you said, I started a podcast called the Hunter's Quest Podcast, like, about 2 years ago. Mainly just to kind of, well, I went on a backcountry trip and it really changed my life. It was like my first Western hunting experience and it was like a pretty intense backcountry trip. And it felt like I had just found what I'd been searching for in terms of adventure and stuff like that. So I started a podcast. It's about Western hunting from an East Coaster's perspective, you know, but it's also, it's got a little bit of a different aspect to it. I like to kind of ask my guests about, their spirituality and faith kind of element. It's just a little bit of a different angle. I think a lot of the content I was gravitating towards when I was getting into podcasts was like the, fitness and mental toughness piece. Yeah. But I felt like no one was really addressing, spirituality, and I try to do it without really being preachy or like really like forcing one theology down people's throats. I just kind of like to have the conversation. So, but anyway, been doing the podcast for about 2 years and then moved into film. I have a background in TV. I worked for a TV show for like 7 years before I got into this stuff. So, nice. I was kind of doing YouTube stuff and kind of linked up with some other YouTube creators and did some collaboration, and then kind of decided to give it a try on old-fashioned TV. So with my TV background, I'm actually going to be launching a show on the Sportsman Channel of 2020 on Q3 of 2023. So that'll be this July on very Sportsman nice. Channel. It's launching. So very busy time, but it's all good, fun stuff. So that's what I'm working on now, man.
For sure. Well, we'll get into all that here in a little bit, but I kind of want to go back to the beginning. How did you get into hunting and all that stuff? Where did that start for you?
Yeah, man. So, you know, I think like a lot of men, I've been through a lot of phases in my life and been into a lot of different stuff, but it seems like one of the two things that's always been there is just my love for hunting and the outdoors. Started when I was a kid. My dad started taking me dove hunting, I guess would be where I got my start. And before that, I was, you know, released with a Red Ryder BB gun and a little bow in my backyard, you know. But my dad started taking me dove hunting. I was probably 7 or 8, got my first shotgun. And then I was duck hunting. And then about the age of 14, we kind of randomly got permission to hunt, to deer hunt on this farm over on the eastern shore of Virginia, which is like this little peninsula on the east side of the Chesapeake Bay, and the tip of it is part of Virginia, and but you have to drive across the Bay Bridge Tunnel to get there. But anyway, there's just tons of deer over there. So so my dad had been into bow hunting when he was younger, but kind of had gone more the waterfowling route. But when we got permission, he got me a bow, and nice. We went over there, and I still remember it like it was yesterday, my first time ever. Well, it hadn't been my first time sitting on a tree stand, because my dad took me on some public land in Kentucky and we sat there for like 3 days and never saw a single deer. So that's kind of what I thought deer hunting was. And then I went out on this first night ever on this farm over the Eastern Shore, and I like watched like 14 deer out in this little bean field, and they were just, I mean, they were all probably like 70, 80 yards, had no idea I was there, just for hours, and I was just hooked at that point. So yeah, I mean, so that, you know, that was where I got my love of bow hunting, and I was just obsessed with bow hunting in high school and into college. And then about 3 or 4 years ago is when I kind of discovered Western hunting, and that kind of opened up a whole new box for me. But
yeah, definitely. Tell me kind about, of the short story about of that, because you said at the beginning that you went on your first kind of Western hunt, and that kind of really changed things for you. Tell me about that experience for you.
Yeah, so I knew – it's a long story, so I'll try to condense it as much as I can. But real quick, are you getting like a weird glitchy sound, or is that just my end?
I'm getting it from you. I don't know if it's – is it coming through weird on my side as well, or
– I don't know. I hear it, but I don't know what it is. It's just like every couple seconds it's like –
yeah.
Do you ever get that normally or no?
Whatever you just did, I don't know if you just changed something, but it's gone now on my end.
Okay. 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 So I was just coming into a place in my life where the possibility of doing things like, you know, an extended mountain hunt were possible, because I was getting more physical fit and had some personal issues I was dealing with, which you can hear all about if you go back and listen to the first episode of my podcast. I basically had some addiction issues I was working through. Okay. But anyway, long story short, I don't mind talking about it, but I just want to keep things on track. But
yeah.
So yeah, if you guys want to hear about that, you can go check out my podcast. But anyway, I knew I wanted to get into Western hunting, but I didn't know where to start, like I think a lot of guys. And I kind of started looking around, and I kind of, to be honest, got discouraged. And I was like, I'm never going to be able to figure this out. Like, let me try one thing. See if that's the headphones are maybe making that sound. But, so I kind of got discouraged, man. And I was like, I don't know if I can figure this out. Maybe I should just stick to deer hunting or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, then like, I mean, I think it was providentially a friend of a friend reached out on Instagram and was kind of like, hey, man, I'm going on this, you know, DIY walk-in caribou hunt in Alaska. I need a partner. And I was like, okay. So I just said yes and just did it. And I didn't really know exactly what I was getting myself into, to be honest. But then I started realizing what was going to be entailed in that, and started really just doing a deep dive on backcountry hunting and trying to learn as much as I can and train and get the gear I could get. And yeah, went on that first trip, and it was just, I don't know, just the, like I said, always loved hunting, always really loved adventure, but didn't have much mountain experience. And then to kind of, and then coming from the East, I mean, most of my hunting was, you know, agriculture, farmland. I'd done some public land hunting, but even out here, the public land is just a lot smaller, you know, than out West, and especially in Alaska. I mean, and just kind of realizing that there was all this land out there that if you were willing to work hard, you could find like real wilderness, real adventure. It was still out there, you know, like yeah. Not, there was still wild places that you could find true adventure if you were willing to work for it. So that just like, was just like a really cool thought for me, and going to Alaska and experiencing it. It's just, not that there's anything wrong with deer hunting in your backyard. I still like doing that too, but, it's just that complete immersive experience of being back there for days on end. And, it's just something different, man. It's totally wild.
Definitely. Yeah. I enjoy doing the backcountry stuff. It's been a couple years since I've gotten to do it, but I'm putting it like top of the priority list for this fall is to do like a 7-day backcountry hunt. So
yeah. Where definitely. Do you live?
I live in Arizona now. I'm originally from Nevada. So,
okay. Yeah, I feel like, you should try to do like at least one of those trips a year if you can. Like, obviously, yeah, don't make it harder than you have to, but like, it's, I don't know, there's just something, something different about when you have to literally work for every single thing. You gotta get your water, you gotta, you know, cook every single meal, you gotta, you know, collect firewood. It's just, it's an experience, man.
Definitely. Yeah, I agree. Trying to do one of those every year. Unfortunately, the tags I've drawn the last couple of years, just the areas they were in just weren't conducive to doing the full on backcountry thing. But I mean, even those, just I think is, I mean, something pretty much every hunter says is it's almost like a therapy of some sort.
Yeah. I mean, and there. Even like, you know, I started getting the itch before I really started doing Western hunting. I started getting the itch. And actually, the first ever really, like, you know, multi-night public land kind of hunting adventure I did was right here in my home state of Virginia. Like I said, you know, we don't have as much public land, but we do have the George Washington National Forest and the Jefferson National Forest. So even if you're listening to this and you live in, you know, in the East or the Midwest, like, you know, don't be discouraged if you can't make it out west. You know, like, I would recommend trying to start planning that and looking towards that. But if you can't the next year or two, get out there and find some public land in your home state and still, you can still make a cool adventure out of it.
For sure. For sure. So are you doing mostly like bow hunting stuff now? Are you rifle hunting or kind of mix or?
Right now, all the Western stuff that I've been doing has been rifle hunts. Okay. So like I said, my first deer ever, my first buck ever, and most of my deer as a young man were archery because the county I grew up in was bow and shotgun only. You couldn't rifle hunt. So a combination of the fact that since I couldn't rifle hunt growing up, it was kind of it's kind of almost like a new challenge, even though that might sound weird to some people, because I didn't know anything about rifles, like nothing. Like I didn't know how to sight in a rifle, I didn't know how to mount a scope, you know, nothing about ballistics. So learning all that's been fun. Plus, just to be honest, it's a bit of a learning curve, like basically doing DIY, you know, public land Western hunting coming from out east. And it's already such a learning curve. And then trying to add on top of it, trying to film everything, like,
yeah,
I kind of want to stack the odds as much as I can in my favor when I can. So that's another reason why I'm kind of holding off a little bit. Now, it's going to come time soon where I'm going to have to start doing some more archery stuff, but for now everything I've done to this point's been rifle.
Gotcha. What other kind of Western hunts have you done over the years? Are there any hunts that really stand out to you?
Well, I haven't done a ton since it's only been 3 or 4 years. Yeah. So they all kind of stand out, but yeah. I'm looking behind me right now on all my Euros I got. So I had an amazing year this year. My first, so 2021 was awesome. I went to Kodiak that year and got a Sitka blacktail, and I shot my first antelope that year. And that was cool because that was the first time I'd done like a Western DIY trip where I was kind of the leader of the trip. Like I brought my cousin and my uncle with me. I walked them through getting their tags and, you know, I was the guy e-scouting. I was the guy with the plan. And was able to get my cousin on his first ever Western big game animal and got my first ever antelope.
Nice.
So that one stands out. And then this year, you know, I had an amazing mule. I killed my first mule deer this year. And then I killed my first mature mule deer this year, which that was an amazing hunt in November during the rut. And really fun hunt. And then I shot a coos deer this year. So it was an awesome year. They all kind of stand out at this point. Right now, I'd say probably my mule deer hunt where I shot my big mule deer. And then that first antelope hunt are probably the ones that stand out most in my mind right now. But
nice. Tell me about that mule deer hunt. How did that go?
Yeah, it was a ton of fun, man. It was a general tag. It was in November. You know, I don't mind saying the state, but I'm just not gonna say it because
you're good.
Whatever. You can probably figure it out, and people will watch the episode. And if you know anything about, you'll be able to figure it out. But Yeah, it was awesome, dude. I mean, the weather was super cold where I was heading this year in November. And, you know, I'm from Virginia, dude. So, I mean, I get cold deer hunting when it's like 20 degrees. And the first morning we were out there, it was negative 23. Like, I'm not even used to, I'm pretty like surprised that I survived, actually. No, like, I mean, I was wearing so much stuff, but that was cool. Just because to be honest with you, I think that was the first deer I ever killed in the snow. Like that's how, cause you know, I'm from the South. So So just hunting in that like completely different environment where it was just like Hoth, you know, like just freezing cold. And it was kind of like breaks country, which I've never hunted before. So that was a totally new experience. It's a very, it's kind of deceiving how physically tough it is. And it's also really tough to kind of e-scout and like navigate with a topo map because everything is just, it's not like big obvious features. It's like up and down, up and down, up and down the whole way. And so, yeah, so, you know, we hunted for a couple days. We had opportunities almost every single day. And then, you know, we kind of hit that low point of the hunt where the weather got really bad. It was kind of depressing. And then I think it was day five or six, we found this big, he's only a forky, but he's like a big old deer. Like I measured him out the other night. I measured like 130 inches on him on only 2 points on each side. Well, he's got little brow tines too, but
yeah,
just a big old forky. And, but we saw him from like two and a half miles away and we were able to get in on him. And it was my first mature mule deer. So it was a really cool hunt, man.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. A big forky like that is on my list of things that I really want to shoot. I just think they look super cool.
Yeah, dude. He's got like some trash on a couple of his tines and he's just super wide and, yeah, it's old deer.
Nice.
But, yeah, he's cool.
That's cool. What else did you have this fall? Did you get out doing any elk hunting, anything like that? Or
no, so I just did let's see. So I did my antelope. Then I did a mule deer hunt. Then I did another mule deer hunt. And then I did a coos deer. And then I'm going to head out for bear season here in a couple weeks. But
did you do coos deer here in Arizona? Or did you go down to Mexico?
I went to Mexico this year. I did Arizona last year. This year we did Mexico.
Were you just down there with Brian Call and Lampers?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, me and Brad were hunting together, and then Ryan and Brian were hunting together. So I don't know if he's going to release on his channel ours or not. Maybe later. I think he wants to. Well, I think he's planning on putting some more bear hunt films out.
Yeah.
But. Anyway, doesn't matter. But yeah, I was down there. But elk, no. So my goal for this year is to kill my first elk. So I got applications in a few places. So we'll see how that goes down. But that's my goal this year.
Nice, nice. Are there any states in specific that you're really looking at that you think are going to be promising to get that done?
Well, I'm applying in Montana, just for a general tag. And it took me a while to figure out Montana's draw system. I finally did figure it out. I thought I was going in with three preference points, but it turns out I was going with three bonus points, which is totally different.
Okay.
So I'm going in with 0 points, but last year it was still like a 74% draw with 0 points. So
yeah. Yeah. It's kind of weird. I've been doing like a draw application series with, Dave Barnett from Go Hunt, and we just did the Montana one a couple weeks ago, and yeah, it's kind of crazy how like you have a lot better odds at 0 points, you have really good odds, and at 1 point you have pretty much 0%
yeah
chance. And then right. At 2 points you're pretty much 100%, so
yeah, it's super strange. But and I had to call Montana Game and Fish like six times before I figured out what they were talking about, but I finally did. And so Lord willing, I'll be doing that. If not, you know, it's funny because like when you're planning to like create content and stuff like that, like if I don't draw that, I got to do something. I can't just not do anything. So I have like all these like, okay, I have like backups, you know what I mean? So it's crazy. So I have some backups and then, but then I might, if that doesn't, well, either way, I'm going to be going out to Oregon in November to hunt with my buddy Luke, who's a really talented videographer that, and we've become friends and been working together on some stuff. He's from out in Oregon.
Okay.
And so the last deer I need for my deer slam, the last deer species, subspecies, is the Columbia blacktail. So we're going to go out and spend a few days hunting Columbia and then hunt some Roosevelts for a few days after that.
Very nice. Sounds like a fun trip for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that, man.
Definitely. Well, let's talk about this filmmaking stuff. How did that start for you? And then how has it kind of transitioned into like the hunting films and all that?
Yeah, so I worked for a TV show called The 700 Club. It's like a Christian kind of news variety show. It was really popular back in like the 80s and 90s, but now most people haven't heard of it. But it's a Christian Broadcasting Network and a great company. I learned a ton there. I started off as a camera operator for like 2 years, and then I was a producer, and I was really able to do some cool like humanitarian disaster relief work and travel to like Nepal and Ecuador and Turkey. I did some stories in Thailand and Cambodia, so I did some really cool work there. And then I was a producer for 5 years. So that's where I learned to edit and kind of all the logistical stuff that goes into producing TV. And then to kind of condense a long story, I was doing the podcast and I was making some really good progress and making some good connections. And do you know Dan Staton from Elk Shape?
I don't know him personally, but I know of him. Yeah.
Yeah. So he was on my podcast and then we started talking and he hired me to come out and film a hunt for him. And then I did a podcast with Brian Call, and that's how I linked up with him. And then my wife actually surprised me for Christmas with this trip to Kodiak Island. Nice. And I wasn't really planning on doing film. I was just kind of doing the podcast kind of as a side thing or whatever. And then, I got this trip coming up and I was like, man, like I'm going to Kodiak. Like I have to film it. It'd be stupid to not film it. And so I got like a used camera on a rock slide and then I rented a second camera and filmed that. And then I ended up sending a rough cut to Brian Call and he liked it and kind of wanted to collaborate and work on some stuff together. And he helped me kind of edit it a little bit. And he actually put it out on Gritty YouTube channel I don't know if that was like 2 years ago or something. So that got a little bit more eyeballs on it. And then I started kind of looking more into the traditional like linear TV stuff. Like I was having some guys on the podcast like Jason Matzinger and Chris Denham and Greg McHale and Melissa Bachman and Jana Waller, these like TV people, and kind of started talking to them more and thought I'd give it a shot. So anyway, it's kind of condensing a long story into a short one, but that's how I ended up linking up with the Sportsman Channel folks and gonna give that a shot, man. See how it goes.
Nice. So what is it like, how much does like filming a hunt, I guess, like how does that affect the actual hunt? How is it different to just going on a hunt where you're not filming? Is it a big change or is it just
processors? It's funny because at this point now I almost can't imagine going on a film and not, or going on a hunt and not filming it.
Okay.
Like this year I just said, like I accidentally said going on a film.
It's just
part of what I do now. Like it would almost, like it sounds weird, or like I don't know, maybe it sounds bad, but it almost to me would be like a waste to go on a film, but it's not a waste. It is nice to once in a while not be filming and just be hunting. like when I did that trip with my my family, the antelope trip I was talking about, I originally was gonna try to take it really seriously and like film it and try to do like, you know, and I did end up putting a little film out about it or whatever, but it was just I needed to just enjoy the hunt and just hang out with my family and just like hunt. So the film didn't turn out as good as I would have liked, but I really enjoyed just like hunting with my family. So I think there's definitely a time for that. And like, as content creators, it can be easy to fall into that trap of like never doing anything that's not filmed.
Yeah.
But, so I try to do that, or like try to take my son on like a hunt and like, don't worry about trying to, you know, capture anything or whatever. Just go for fun and hang out with him. But yeah, I mean, honestly, I've only been on one Western hunt that we weren't filming, and that was the first one I ever did. So I honestly don't, I can't really imagine not filming. I don't really know what it's like.
For sure. What gear are you using to film your hunts as far as like your camera and all that stuff goes? And then how are you kind of managing that gear and keeping it organized in the field and keeping it clean type stuff?
Yeah. So I shoot on Sony A7S3s, and usually I'll carry one with, you know, pretty wide angle lens kind of on my shoulder for talking to the camera and capturing stuff quickly on the fly. And then I'll have one camera dedicated with this huge 200 to 600 lens with a doubler on it. I mean, it's a commitment shooting on DSLRs. You know, a lot of shows and stuff shoot on these little, you know, handy cams and stuff, and you can get some good stuff, but like, if you really want that like really quality, like cinematic look, like you gotta pay the price with your legs and carry around huge lenses and DSLRs. But so those are the cameras I shoot on. As far as how do I manage it, basically you just have to tell yourself from the get-go you're gonna have the heaviest pack of anybody every single time, and you're just gonna have to like it.
Yeah.
And train accordingly. I mean, it sounds funny, but it's true. I mean, you know, I'm usually carrying two cameras and lenses and rifle, and as far as keeping them clean and stuff, I mean, I don't know. They're pretty resilient.
Are they?
The cameras are pretty resilient. Yeah, I mean, like, Brian, I always try really hard to keep my lens caps on and, like, keep stuff as covered up as I can. Like, it's funny, like, Brian, like, he's really rough on gear. Like, they just throw stuff around. Like, they never have lens caps on their stuff. And so, you just do the best you can, man. You buy insurance on all your gear. And you just do the best you can.
Nice. So are you doing more of like the cinematic type film hunts or a vlog style type hunt, or what's your kind of preferred style there?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, a lot of my style came from watching Brian, because he was kind of the guy I was looking up to. You know, so it's kind of a mix of vlog style, but with the cinematic look, and just kind of capturing things how they went down. Like, I don't like to do voiceovers or cut back to me in the studio. Oh, hey guys, here's how this hunt went down. I mean, sometimes you got to do that.
Yeah.
But I like to, you know, do the updates in the field, keep it very real, keep it very kind of raw as far as the storytelling, but then also shoot it with the equipment and the know-how, so it looks very cinematic and cool.
For sure. And are you just kind of filming things as they happen, or are you trying to, and when I say stage shots, I don't mean like, oh, you're faking the shot, or you're doing something that didn't happen, but you're like trying to create something that looks a little bit more cinematic?
I mean, there are times when you do stuff like that, but they're rare. I mean, we 98% of the time are just capturing things as they happen. I'm trying to think of an example of when we might set something up. I mean, like, if you're you know, maybe if you shoot an animal, like, just, and it's in the heat of the moment, you know, and it just happens really fast, we might sometimes go back and, like, I'll get a shot of the person just firing around.
Okay.
To be able to edit that into the shot sequence.
Gotcha.
Because when you're shooting an animal, you know, you want to get the kill shot. And so ideally, in a perfect world, you have time to set up the camera on the animal and then set up your second camera on the shooter. But sometimes it just doesn't happen. And to be able to kind of edit it together nice, occasionally, if we miss it, if it happens really fast, we'll just turn the camera and get another shot of the person taking a shot. But that's pretty much it. I mean, almost everything is just, you know, as it happens, you know.
Gotcha. Well, tell me about this show that you're doing for, it was Sportsman's Channel, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So is that like a show where you're the, are you filming it, or are you the main, like the main guy in front of the camera, or?
Yeah. So I'm hosting the show. Nice. I'm also acting as kind of the secondary cameraman. Okay. So it's kind of cool, 'cause it's kind of got a behind the scenes type feel. Like in the show, you'll see me also carrying a camera around sometimes or getting shots and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I enjoy filming still, and B, I can, you know, it's more financially viable to hire one cameraman and then act as a second cameraman. It's just more efficient. So the kind of the basic premise of the show is DIY Western hunting from a non-Westerner's perspective. I'm a guy from Virginia. I'm doing these DIY Western hunts, and just kind of showing, hey, if I can do it, you can do it. Like, if I can do it, anybody can do it. If you have the right tools, the right research, you can do it. You don't have to wait years to hunt. You don't have to hire a guide if you don't want to. So that's kind of the premise. And so I'm doing that through, like I said, you know, hunt films of me showing you that I'm doing it. Like, for example, my antelope hunt this year was on a 0.100% draw unit.
Right.
So it's, you know, anybody can get. And so I want to show that. And, you know, it's stuff that, like, the hunts are cool enough to where, like, Western hunting guys will like it and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. But they're also kind of relatable. A lot of the hunts you're going to see me doing are species firsts for me.
Okay.
Like this year in season one, I got my first mule deer, my first coos deer. It was my second antelope, my first mature coos deer. And then, you know, Lord willing, you're going to see me shoot my first bear, my first caribou, my first elk, and the season's coming. So, it's kind of happening in real time, me learning how to do all this stuff. And then also another kind of, I don't want to give away too much, is kind of, it's going to be kind of a unique sort of podcast style format of the show itself. So it's also going to have some episodes where I bring on guests, like, in season one so far, I'm doing an episode with Brian Call, I'm doing an episode with Jana Waller, and I'm doing an episode with Remy Warren, potentially a couple others, where we kind of break down a hunt that they've done and give some kind of tips and tactics on how that might help someone from the East Coast or the Midwest, do some DIY hunts. So that's kind of the point, is to show folks, to inspire people, to educate people, and show, like, this resource that we have that's out there, you know, and of course, not just anybody can jump in a car and go out and, you know, put a tag on a mule deer. But if you're an experienced hunter and you take it seriously and you research and train, and it definitely can be done, because I'm doing it and I'm not, you know, I'm just a normal guy. So
there you go. What's the, like, filming and production process like on a TV show compared to doing just like a YouTube film?
Well, there's definitely, you know, a lot more formal. I mean, there's definitely there's broadcast standards as far as exposure, color, audio levels. You have to, you know, add in the commercial breaks. You know, in outdoor TV, it's the job of the producer to secure funding through sponsorship. So I'm an editor right now. I'm an editor. I'm also a salesman. I'm also planning season two. I'm also marketing. I'm, you know, it's a lot, dude. Yeah, you got to add closed captioning. It's a lot more formal, more structured. You know, the time, it's got to be fairly exact. How long your time is. So it's just a lot more structured, a lot less free form, and just kind of just got to make sure you got your P's and Q's all lined up. And my TV background is definitely huge. Not that it can't be done without that, but that experience is really what's allowed me to kind of make this happen.
Nice. How did this opportunity come about for you? Did you kind of make it happen, or did Sportsman's Channel reach?
I think that might happen, but I'm pretty sure that never happens. It may have happened before, but I don't think, at least not these days, that's not how it happens with outdoor TV anyway. Okay. I can only speak for outdoor TV because that's all I've really have experience with firsthand. But yeah, you basically, it's like anything else. So like I said, the show, you have to come to them, right? Okay. And then you basically, they have to approve your show. Obviously they're not just gonna let anything on there, but you basically come to them, you say, here's what I can do, and they approve it. So
nice.
I don't know, does that answer your question at all?
No, that makes sense. Okay, how that worked, I didn't know if they, you know, saw what you were doing with a podcast and social media and YouTube films and had reached out to you wanting to do a TV show with you, or if you kind of
it's like anything else in life. It's like, it's not really what you know, it's who you know. So that's what the podcast was so important, is because not only are you creating content, I'm sure you're starting to find this too, but you're just networking. So it was actually through a podcast guest who had produced several shows, and then I was like, you know, hey man, what's this process like, you know, how does it work? And then he linked me up with some of his contacts at the networks, and then I started talking to them. And so it's like that, you know, it's networking
for sure. For sure. Let's talk about your podcast for a little bit. How did that, where did that idea come from? Why did you want to start it, and kind of where is it taking
you
and all that?
So after that first trip to Alaska, I got to give you a little bit of background to explain where it is. So, I was struggling with addiction, and then I got clean, and then I got really overweight, and then I started to kind of get in shape a little bit. And then that's when my buddy invited me on this trip. And then I learned, and then I realized like what I'm physically going to have to do to like do this hunt. So then I had to go like hardcore into training, not only just training physically, but also learning. Like I'd never done a backcountry trip and I'm about to go to Alaska. So it's like going from like zero experience to like a 10 out of 10 toughness trip. So I had to learn about boots. I had to learn about packs. I had to learn about backpacking gear. I had to learn about backpacking food. I had to learn about how to shoot and sight in a rifle. I had so much stuff I had to learn. And on top of it, I had to get in shape to do it. And so I started devouring content, like mainly podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, like I said, since I was coming out of this dark time in my life when I was dealing with addiction and overweight, I was learning all these new skills, but also it was like, I was like becoming a better human through hunting because I was learning a lot and I was having to grow mentally and physically to do this hunt. Right. And I noticed that like, so, you know, in Western hunting and mountain hunting, because of the nature of it, you begin to listen to conversations that have to do with things like physical fitness and mental toughness, health, all these kind of things that, anyway, I found myself more gravitating towards these type of topics, these almost like self-development, you know, self-improvement topics. I still, you know, liked and needed all the tips and tactics stuff, but where I really was like enjoying it was this self-improvement kind of content.
I mean, that's so why guys like Cam Haynes and Dan Staton are as popular as they are.
Exactly. And so I think I might have been listening to a Dan Staton podcast, and I could tell that like him and other guys like him, a lot of them were believers or had some sort of faith. Mm-hmm. But no one was really talking about it. So I was like, all right, well, here's a niche where I can talk to these guys, have a good show, and then kind of breach the subject of spirituality, like I said before, without, you know, without being really preachy or anything, but just kind of having that conversation. So after I got back from Alaska, I felt like that was something I should do. And then it wasn't long after that that, you know, COVID happened. I was working from home and had a lot of ability to do my job, but also had some extra free time where I could produce this podcast. So I just started reaching out to all these kind of big name guys. And to my surprise, like almost all of them said yes and came on the podcast. And just kind of one thing led to another. And a year later, I had all these great contacts. I'd worked with Dan Staton, and Brian called and invited me out to go on a hunt with them in Arizona. And my filming skills really opened up a lot of doors as well. That's what it was, man. It was like I said before, I was learning, I was creating content, but also just networking with all these guys. So it's been a cool ride. And to be honest with you, as I've been selling these sponsorships and stuff, I've been pushing the show really hard, but a lot of these companies are as interested or more interested in what I've built with the podcast than the show. Like, if you can build a really solid podcast with like good performing numbers and consistency over a long time, it's pretty valuable because people are more likely to go buy a product when they hear a podcast guest. They're more invested in a podcast. You know, TV advertising, people just kind of see it and zone out, right? Yep. But like if you're listening to a podcast and you're invested in the show and you really like the guest and or you know the host, and you're more willing to kind of maybe listen to what they have to say.
For sure.
So anyway.
No, I agree. What has been your experience as far as like creating the podcast, growing the podcast? How have you done all that?
Oh man. Just trying to from day one have the highest quality standards I could possibly do. I wanted it from the very beginning to sound just as good as anybody else's podcast. And then mainly having good guests and letting them talk, and leveraging their audiences. Cause when you're, you know, I mean, when you're first starting out, and for a while, no one cares what you have to say. But if you have someone they care about on your show, they might. And then you start to have 5 or 10, and then, okay. And then they start to get to know you a little bit. And then, so that's what it comes down to is having good quality, good guests, good conversations, and just being consistent, man. And just continuing, just keep going.
For sure. At what point, how long have you been doing the podcast? You said about 2 years now?
Yeah, a little over 2 years.
Okay.
At what point did you start? 112 episodes, I think.
112? Nice. At what point in that kind of, in that timeline of the podcast, did you really start to see that growth take off? Was it like 3 months, 6 months, a year? Was there a certain turning point for you?
Well, to be honest, I've had spikes along the way. You know, like you might have certain guests or like when I first started collaborating some with Brian Call, you know, I got a big spike, but then it flattens out, you know. And I did another big episode with a big name guy, kind of a controversial guy this summer. He got another huge spike. But so you'll see spikes, but to be honest, man, it hasn't been like any point where it's like everything is just like boom and just happened. It's just slow, steady growth over a long time. It's just it's kind of like gains in the gym or in your spiritual growth or anything like that. It's like you just keep doing the work week in and week out, and week in and week out, and it'll peak here and it'll dip there and it'll peak here. But what really matters is consistency over a long period of time, just like going to the gym.
Gotcha. You mentioned like talking about the spirituality and all that in your podcast. Has that been something that's kind of been well received, or do you get some controversy about that, or not that I'm sure it matters too much to you? I mean, that's something that's important to you, but how is that received by the public?
So, like I said, I kind of from the beginning knew that I didn't want to be like a quote unquote Christian podcast. Mm-hmm. Not that there's anything wrong with those, and there are some good ones out there, and I'm glad they're out there. I just wanted to, like, if you do that, there's a subset of the audience that automatically is not going to listen. And if you're every single episode just hammering one theology down people's throats, they're, you know, you're going to have the group that loves it and stays around, but you're going to have a lot of guys that just immediately turn it off. So I wanted to create something that was valuable and enjoyable content for anybody of any like hunting skill level and of any spirituality. Like a lot of my guests are members of the LDS church. A lot of my friends in the hunting community are members of the LDS church. There are a lot of Christians, but then there are also guys that don't really have much of any faith. Or I've had one guest that was talking about New Age and stuff when I asked them about their spirituality. So I just want to have a conversation, because at the end of the day, I believe if people start looking for truth and they're really looking for truth, they'll eventually end up where they need to be with the gospel. But so I've been actually pleasantly surprised about, you know, taking that approach. It seems like people like it. It's kind of a unique niche. Now I'm sure there are some people who hear it and immediately want to turn it off or whatever, but it's been good for me. And I mean, I genuinely believe too that God has kind of blessed the project because I'm not ashamed to talk about faith. So I believe that I've had some favor from that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that goes with anything you're saying. Like, as long as you're doing what is like honest to you and what you honestly believe,
yeah,
it'll all work out in the end. Like, I think, yeah, you could fake it for a little bit, but eventually, I mean, after however many months or a year of doing your podcast, people are going to realize that you're not really about what you're talking about. So
yeah, authenticity is huge, man. And so I try to be, I'm pretty dang open on the podcast, open about my struggles, and I'm pretty genuine. So yeah, it's just me, man.
For sure. One last thing about the podcast stuff. It's kind of, yeah, I hear it back and forth between content creators. Some guys say to, you know, look at your numbers and watch the numbers and all that stuff. Are you in that camp, or are you somebody that just ignores all the stats and stuff behind your podcast and you just do what you want kind of thing?
I think it's important to look at your numbers. I don't think that you necessarily should. I mean, it depends on your goal eventually. If you want to grow, you have to measure. You know, yep. I mean, anybody wanting to, if that's a real goal of yours, I think it is important to measure. Now, you don't want to just, you don't want to be completely like at the mercy of your audience where it's like, you're just chasing, you know, what can I do to get the most downloads? You want, like you said before, you want to be true to yourself and authentic and that kind of thing. So, you know, I don't think it's necessarily a all, you know, all in or all out, you know.
Yep.
I think it's important. It's a combination of what you just said. It's important to do what you want to do, do what is, you know, authentic and true. But I also do think it's important to keep an eye on your numbers. I mean, if nothing else, just to know what's going on, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm the same way. I think like, yeah, like it's mostly out of curiosity just to see how it's growing, but there's a difference between actually looking at the numbers and really, really caring about the numbers. Like,
Yeah, I think you shouldn't let it.
If I got half the listens I was getting to now, I would still be doing.
Yeah. Yeah, you shouldn't let that be your motivator, and you shouldn't let it get to you too much. But
yeah,
if it is a goal to actually have some growth and actually, you know, kind of do something with it, you should know your numbers, because even if you don't like looking at your numbers, sponsors are going to want to know your numbers.
Yep.
Yeah. Because they definitely care about numbers. So sure. If that doesn't matter to you, that's fine. And I'm not saying it should matter to you, but if, you know, if it's something you're trying to monetize at some point or build, metrics are important.
Definitely. Cool, man. Well, I don't want to keep you on here too much longer. It sounds like you got a lot of stuff going on, a lot on your plate right now with the show and all that stuff. But, I let you go, one question that I try to ask every guest is for a book recommendation. So is there one that you got for us?
Yeah. So I gotta be that guy and say the number one book recommendation has gotta be the Bible. But, I mean, it's just, it's truth. It's entertaining. But aside from that, I know a lot of people have seen the movie, The Revenant,
mm-hmm.
but I know people always say, oh, the book's better. The book, The Revenant, is so cool. I just listened to it, just to be honest, I listened to it on audiobook, but the book is really cool. So that's the one that comes to my mind first. Oh, the other one, if you like kind of historical fiction, which The Revenant is as well, but another one that's really cool is called All the Light We Cannot See.
Okay.
It's set during World War II. But it's about how this like blind French girl and this young German boy, like how their lives kind of, you know, grow, and then how the World War II happens and their lives like intertwine. It's a really cool story. But All the Light We Cannot See.
Definitely.
So those would be the two books, you know, for self-help, the Bible, and then for entertainment, the other two.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'll have to check them out. I had forgotten that The Revenant was a book as well. And honestly, I don't know if I've ever even watched the movie all the way through.
But okay.
It's one of those that's always on the list. And every time somebody talks about it, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to read that or I'm going to watch that. And then I just never get around to doing it.
Yeah. But yep. If you want a like cool business kind of business book for like business development stuff,
yeah,
a really cool one is called Building a Story Brand by Donald Miller.
Gotcha.
That's a good like business book. So there you go.
There we go.
There's your personal life, entertainment, and business, right? All right there.
Perfect. Cool, man. Well, Hunter, thanks for coming on. Before I let you go, I'll let people know how they can find you, find your podcast, your film work, yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah, man. So I appreciate you having me on. It was fun. And the podcast is just called The Hunter's Quest Podcast on Spotify, Apple, wherever. I do have a YouTube channel where I release all the podcasts in video version, and I have a couple of older films and stuff on there, but mainly be on the lookout this July on Sportsman Channel for the show, and then that will also release digitally, you know, after it airs on Sportsman. So yeah, man. Okay. And then on Instagram at the Sportsman Hunt.
Do you have a name, yeah, for that show that you can tell us yet or not yet?
Yeah, it's just gonna be the same name as the podcast, man. The Hunter's Quest. Just gotcha. Keep it all simple. And then I'm on Instagram. I'm most active on my Instagram at The Hunter's Quest. Like, if you want to message me or anything, I'm usually pretty active there.
Cool, man. Awesome. Well, Hunter, thanks for coming on. Any last words that you want to get out to people before I let you go?
Nah, man. Just get out there, enjoy the great outdoors, and yeah, that's all I got, man. Just get out there, enjoy the public lands that we've got access to in this country, and they're worth fighting for.
Absolutely, man. Well, Hunter, thanks for coming on. Good luck this hunting season, and we'll talk again soon.
You too, man. Thanks again.
No problem. Bye.
All right.
All right, guys. I hope you guys enjoyed that podcast with Hunter McWaters. I definitely had a good time talking with him. Really good conversation about podcasting and what goes into all of that, and growing a podcast, and then the filmmaking stuff was good to talk about as well.
But before I let you guys go, again, make sure you guys check out the podcast on Instagram. It's barely_backcountry_podcast. And then my personal is c.dillashaw. Thank you guys so much for listening. Make sure you guys give the podcast a like, a follow, a share, all those good things. And I will see you guys in the next one.